But other stuff that Gary Null has said isn't necessarily accurate. I want to know what role Gary Null has played in drafting up the five-year plan. And I want to know, and this is the first time I have heard this being confirmed, that in fact there were talk of selling WBAI, of creating an endowment for Pacifica. And I'm not sure I heard that right. So, Bernard, maybe you can go over what you heard that Gary had to say about the issue of endowment for Pacifica. And also, now, here's a man who's a moral person, who have left commercial radio stations and have chosen to work at Pacifica, who now seems not to be clear morally on the issues of where BAI has been for 50 years, of not taking corporate underwriting for its programming. Has NPR and Pacific and PBS has done.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that another thing about the way the interview was structured. A lot of the questions that it just seemed that way to me, that many of the questions that were given to Bessie Wash, you know, it was like softballs. They were very, very soft. And a lot of them were leading questions, you know, and almost as if he knew what the answers were going to be. I don't know if over time that'll be straightened out, but it appears that he has come to some conclusion. For instance, the constant reference to people, these threats. Now, I've been at BAI for 20 years, and Errol, you've seen some of the letters that I've gotten where people have threatened my life. That's a part of being on WBAI. I mean, you know, it's not something that you're proud of or you want to have happen, but whenever you challenge the status quo, you're going to get people who will become upset. And, you know, I've gotten threats over the years, Samoria's gotten threats over the years, you've gotten threats over the years, but we move forward, you know, we don't allow that to stop us from doing our work. And so to constantly harp on these threats as if they're something new, it is par for the course at WBAI, is a way of actually determining whether or not you're doing your work properly. If you're not ruffling any feathers, then you probably aren't doing what you're supposed to be doing. So, you know, he's just been throwing lobbing a whole lot of softballs, up in the air, and I'm wondering just what's going to happen. I'm sure that our listeners, as I said, who are very intelligent, will begin to recognize that there is a pattern here, that people aren't, the way that they're being portrayed on the air. These are a few moments of going to the air, and having the ability to say what we have to say in no way equal the hours and hours of time that people have been on the air calling us all kinds of names, making all kinds of negative suggestions about our character. So I still want to wait and see just what's going to happen with this whole thing, because BAI is very important. Having this voice is extremely important, particularly to the people who don't have a voice. This is the only place. This is the only game in town, as Samori Marksman used to say. This is the only place that the people who don't share the mainstream view can have their concerns expressed. And it's worth fighting for. It's worth doing whatever we can to make sure that we are able to maintain that voice.
And we got it. I personally want to thank Gary Null for whatever reason breaking the silence. The same way I wonder why he's breaking it now. The same way I wonder why they decided at the time to fire Valerie Van Isler when they chose to do it. Because there have been complaints against Valerie Van Isler. I took to the local advisory board a vote of no confidence, as expressed by the staff of WBAI some years ago. Other people have talked about firing Val Revanisler. But more than that, what we were talking about was not having access to the records and information. And so those were reflected on Val Revanisler. But there were Pacifica policies. A lot of stuff that Valerie did that we were blaming her for were, in fact, Pacifica policies that she herself...
I think that's important, because one of the things that we're going to have to look at some point is the relationship between the national board and the station managers. It may not be in the best interest of the local radio station to have the station manager be under the executive director, because you get mixed allegiances there. Valerie Van Isler should have told us straight up, look, I don't have the information. But she chose not to, and it appeared that she was withholding information that she didn't have. Not only did she not have it, but Pacifica isn't allowing anybody to see the information. There are lawsuits right now that are in court where people are demanding to see the information. And look at Utrice last week. On last Tuesday, somebody called her last caller and said, you told us that because of the January fund drive, the winter fund drive, after that you would let us know how well things are going. And he said, I wonder if the results are in. She said, yes. She said, so he paused for a moment, and then he said, well, what are they? And she says, that's my business. Now, that's another level. Valerie never said that was her business. There is another level of nastiness that has been injected into WBAI, which is tantamount to a disrespect for our listeners. And it comes out of Pacifica. Pacifica is responsible for this injection of venom that gets spewed out over and over throughout the broadcast day. There was a desperate attempt last week to come in and create a new image for itself by the station manager. Now, who is going to come on the air for 4 days in a row? We have trouble all over the planet. They're going to sit there and pontificate about their childhood, about what is good media, what isn't good media, talking negatively about Juan Gonzalez, about me, about anybody else who's on the outside, not giving any of us an opportunity to say anything in response. I mean, that is not the kind of broadcasting that our listeners are accustomed to, and it appears that they will stand for, because they're not responding positively to these changes. And it's not because Juan Gonzalez said it or Dennis said it. It's because they're not stupid. They're not going to give money to something that they no longer believe in. And we got to do a lot of damage control when we come back. We got to try and regain the confidence of these listeners. Because there used to be a sign when we were over at the church on Master Control saying, do not lie on the air. They crossed out the do not. And they come on the air and they're constantly lying. Paul DiRienzo, it's been just shameless the way he has behaved throughout this whole thing. And there's going to be a price to pay for that.
Right.
And the price that we're paying right now is that our listeners are turning away. They're not listening to the radio station, and that's a real tragedy, because we put a lot of work into building up that radio station into what it was prior to December 22nd.
Well, perhaps it's not too late in terms of saving the network and saving WBAI. I'm saying perhaps, because the situation within Pacifica has been deteriorating for many years. It was in 1995 that David DiVernoni, can't pronounce his name, disclosed in front of a meeting in June in Washington, D.C. at a board meeting that Pacifica can fire 95% of its audience, that they can make the change to music, that they can find a more upscale audience. The only thing that he could find Pacifica's audience and had baffled these guys so much that the only common indices that Pacifica audience had in common was their level of education. And, you know, from the taxicab driver on the street to the janitor or anyone who listens to WBAI radio, one of the things that people have is an educated and intelligent mind out there. And that was the thing that they had in common. The number of college-educated people, the number of educated listeners and that we had rank, that was the ranking. That was the common thread that our listeners shared. And they were willing to sacrifice that for a larger audience. In New York, what we said is that we can make intelligent radio for intelligent people. And we chose to continue to grow that audience. And I think it has paid off with the listenership that we have in WBAI, the stuff that we have done in terms of outreach, moving out in the community to reach the audience and to communicate with them, is something that we're continuing to do on WBAI in Exile. So, hey, this weekend you will find us, WBAI in Exile, doing two things in the community. We will be coming to you from Boys and Girls High School for the entire event of the African International Arts Festival, as well as on Saturday we will be coming to you live and direct from Huntington, Long Island, where we'll be doing one thing and one thing only, is from 11 to 4 o'clock, is making good radio. He's doing programming germane to the people on Long Island, programming that is germane to a national and an international listenership. And, folks, that's what we do, and that's what we hope to continue to do, not to analyze ad nauseum who we are or what we are when we get on the radio or when we take to these airwaves. This is a special that we're doing to set the record straight. And Gary Null, we want to thank you for whatever reason you've chosen now to take this position that you have taken it to begin to expose some of the things that are going on. Yeah, we are conducting the struggle, I believe, in a compassionate manner. And to that end, I want to ask Dennis, what plans does Pacifica Campaign have in the future, and how can people join up with it?
Well, let me just say that now that we've progressed to the 3 o'clock hour here on the East Coast, we're cutting into talkback time, which many people in New York know as UTC Lead's previous show, now hosted by Hugh Hamilton. I don't know who's on this week, but we were regaled, as you said last week, by 8 hours of Utrecht Sea Lead on that free and fair exchange of information and ideas. Talk back with Coop Hamilton. But we'll forego that for today. We have, in particular, the summer season is slow for boycotting, so although we'll be developing the boycott, we're going to be working on the 7 stick-in-the-mud board majority members who are just clinging to this failed coup of theirs. And those are Bertram Lee Sr., John Murdoch.
Hold on a second. Who's Bertram Lee Sr.?
Bertram Lee is an entrepreneur. He's a person who made a career buying and selling broadcast licenses, among other things. He's a former partner of Ron Brown, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, who oddly enough was killed descending by truck down into Sarajevo. I don't know what the Secretary of Commerce was doing trying to run siege lines into Sarajevo, but whether it was mere adventurism or if he was actually
I thought he was in an airplane.
A foothold for multinational corporations. Who knows? But Bertley was he's on that order. He's, you know, rolls the dice on multi-million-dollar deals. He has done so apparently not as wisely as he ought to have, since he declared bankruptcy twice in 98 and 99. We've gotten a hold of his 99 bankruptcy filing. And it's got some revelatory documents in there, and he's going to be probably have a lot to explain to his fellow and sister board members on the Howard University Board of Directors. He was other community members that he'll have to answer to when we paint the picture of him that both his history and his bankruptcy files paint. So Bert Lee is on a board member. He's an older man. He's had some health problems. His doctor tells him he can't fly anymore. And he's quite a hothead. He had to be restrained in March a couple times from attacking both, you know, beleaguered Edwin Johnston, who was the one attacked by Goh and Ganter. Edwin was at the microphone saying that the board's behavior was somewhat fascistic, and Bertram Lee bolted up and ran over. And much to Edwin's credit, he merely just kept his hands down and said, "No, I'm not calling you a fascist. I'm saying the board is behaving in a fascistic manner." But Bertram Lee was in his face in a very provocative and inflammatory way, shouting at him from 6 inches away. So that's Bert Lee. John Murdoch is the Epstein, Becker, and Green partner, whose accession to the board immediately preceded Pacifica's hiring of Epstein, Becker, and Green. I think there's a probably a conflict of interest there. Murdoch has denied being, to my direct question, he's denied being a part of Epstein, Becker, and Green's profit-sharing plan, but I find that hard to believe. We'll find out, and at least one regional group has committed to filing a complaint against John Murdoch with that state's bar association, where Murdoch has been admitted as a member. So there will be some, the pressure of the public events. So I can give a little prelude to your listeners, who most of whom are on the web, that we're developing a website, EpsteinBeckerSucks.com. You can check that out. It hasn't been formally announced yet, but as a special premium for your listeners, I'm sure they want to check out our one page that we've set up, and there'll be lots of information about Epstein, Becker, and Green. And I would like to say to all the EB&G attorneys who are listening that the reclamation of the Pacifica Network doesn't spell the end of our campaign against Epstein, Becker, and Green. It's really the beginning of the attack on that nefarious law practice and others like Titler and Mendelsohn, who's Littler and Mendelsohn is another even bigger anti-worker law firm. Ken Ford, National Association of Home Builders staffer, he's being vilified now, not only for his behavior on the board. His rise to the board chairmanship was signaled by his immediate invocation of the FBI. He's forwarding benign emails of complaint to the FBI and responding to complainers by saying, "I forwarded your email to the FBI. You'll be hearing from them soon." So for the chair of the Pacifica board to be involving the FBI, I mean, this is an institution that has been investigated, harassed, infiltrated by the FBI for decades. And now we have this, the best we can say about Ken Ford is that he's ignorant of what he's toying with right here. But for him to be involved in the FBI, Matthew Lazar, who's written an excellent book on the history of Pacifica, just penned a letter in response to Ken Ford's calling of the FBI to investigate people critical of him. And you can see that on Pacifica Campaign. We just posted it to our homepage. Ken Ford's notice to fellow and sister board members that he will be using the FBI, and Matthew Lazar's response to that. And there'll be a lot more as we mobilize people's opposition to Ken Ford vis-a-vis the FBI. Valerie Chambers, CPA, PhD in Houston, Texas, just had a nonviolent picket in front of her house yesterday afternoon. We heard that it was very well received. The police, not surprisingly, were called, notorious Houston police, and they were they told Valerie that they could do nothing to stop this expression of free speech. So too bad for you, Valerie Chambers. She teaches accounting and business management at the Texas A&M University in Corpus Christi. People have been in touch with the that school's dean and the chair of her accounting department and her peers on the faculty there and at the other universities where she's worked in Texas will be hearing her complaints. There was a complaint to the Texas State Board of Public Accountancy prepared for David Acosta that can be altered slightly to reflect the fact that Valerie Chambers is sitting on this half nonprofit foundation with $500 million worth of radio license assets, and yet the board, other board members have been denied access to the books. The California State Legislature is nearing their second subpoena of the books as well. So she, as a CPA in Texas, has professional responsibilities to maintain the reputation of accountancy as practiced in Texas, and so there are legal channels by which we can make formal complaints against her, and we certainly will. As we said earlier, Andrea Sisco is mounting, she's receiving more strident and crowded pickets in front of her house, her home office, and as well, she's leaving us little recourse but to document the offensive behavior that she countenances on air and off air at Pacifica stations. And that information will be packaged very professionally. We have quite a few fired and banned radio producers and really literally thousands of people who are contributing their professional services. So there's going to be a compact disc with some choice excerpts from the BAI airwaves demonstrating that there is no diversity sensitivity on the airwaves. And that will be reluctantly distributed to every notable person in the diversity sensitivity training industry. Bob Farrell is from Los Angeles. He's a bit of a cipher. He's an editor with the Los Angeles Sentinel, an African-American newspaper in Los Angeles. He's an ally of Mark Cooper, who's kind of a very problematic programmer at KPFK. We believe, and many people believe, that he aspires to the kind of national prominence that Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman has, and so he's been quite hostile to Democracy Now! So we're trying to work on Bob Farrell, but that as well involves a lot of racial issues that, you know, have been the center of the focus of much of the organizing here in New York to counter the foundation's cynical use of the race card, and that that work is significantly behind in that kind of organizing in Los Angeles to debunk the racial allegations that are levied against.
Well, one of the things I want to say on the issue of the race card, and you know, as someone who grew up learning that Africans sold Africans into slavery, I learned something else, that is an inaccurate statement that there were resistance. But it is to be noted that the interior of Africa could not have been penetrated, nor the interior of the United States have been penetrated, without the work of the native population, without those scouts, who led the troops into the interior because the enemy did not know it. So there have always been Africans who, for one reason, wittingly or unwittingly, has collaborated with the enemies, either it's for their own personal gain, or it's because they believe that doing so would alleviate some problems that they're having with their neighbors. And I think we have seen that scenario playing out at WBAI. And I will repeat what I said on December 23rd. Thurgood Marshall say, "A snake, whether it's black or it's white, the bite is the same." I may be paraphrasing it. So, but for me, it's a little bit harder when you have your own people, some of them who we have slaved and struggled to send to universities, who we have slaved and struggled to get them within places of power within corporation and decision-making position in government, for them to turn out to have joined with the enemy and have collaborated in destroying the very establishment that we have built. We thought maybe they would have been the spook who sat by the door, the people who would have been able to go into these corporations, as Jan Engel Clark say, go into hell and bring back fire from the devil if that's what they people needed, their people needed. But in fact, they have turned out to be nothing but snakes and nothing but weblos, loyal scouts to the enemies of our people and of our progress. And so I have no compunction in relieving those people from the position that they've occupied. That if they're diseased, what you do with cancer is you cut it out before it destroys the entire body. And that's what needs to happen with these people. We do it in a compassionate manner in separating them from the community. I mourn the loss of Andrea Sisto. I thought she was a good sister, but hey, I've been known to be wrong before. So, I'm sorry.
And Errol,
I've known you to be wrong, Errol.
Yeah.
The final board member, Wendell Johns, is an executive of Fannie Mae, which a lot of people misperceive to be a government entity. It's a Washington, D.C. based and originally government chartered mortgage kind of brokerage service. And that's Fannie Mae is the employer. It's actually traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It's a corporation, a massive, multi-billion dollar corporation that Wendell Johns sits on. And so there's the final board member. He is African American in Washington, D.C. So right now we've got one more Houstonian who needs to bow chambers and needs to be driven off, and then a big bunch of people, and Andrea Sisco here, and then Bob Farrell, the sole West Coast opposition board member. But in Washington, D.C., a big need for some organizing with Wendell Johns, Ken Ford, John Murdoch, and Bertram Lee, four African-American men sitting in these positions of illegitimate power. And in D.C., for example, D.C. General Hospital was closed down today. Today was the official day that the public hospital of Washington, D.C., is being closed down by the very problematic
how WPFW covered that issue and covered the close down of DC General Hospital. I know how WBAI covered the close down of Sydenham Hospital. What BAI did was it put us on the air, put Diane Lacey on the air, Reverend from the House of the Lord Church.
The Lynch was on the air?
Yeah, we're all on the air doing teaching on the issues, basically covering the issue of Sydenham around the clock. Reverend Daughtry was on the inside. The politicians and others were on the outside. And we covered it around the clock. The community going in to take control of one of its institutions that the mayor of the city of New York, Edward Koch, was trying to steal away from us. And that was our reaction to it at BAI at that time, to protect community assets by putting our body in front of it. The folks did it at Czech TV. They went in and they held that station for their community, and they put their bodies on the line to maintain community institutions. As a student, I did it at City College. I did it in high school. Martin Luther King did it throughout the South when institutions were threatened. What you do is the reaction is for the community to protect its asset and protect it in the way and the manner in which it knows how to. And civil disobedience, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but at least you've heightened the awareness of people to what's going on around you. You know, one other thing while I'm ranting, I'd like to say that this body that is sitting here trying to recover has spent many hours sleeping on the floor at WBAI. You know, Bernard White, you have spent many hours at WBAI, sleeping on the floor, producing programs, staying up, not getting paid for the work that you have done to build WBAI. And I am putting people on notice now that I intend to be able to walk back in that station And it better be in the form in which we left it. Not a equipment being damaged, nothing being broken because you didn't take it broken, you didn't take it damaged, and many of you who are now there holding on to it didn't do a damn thing to secure it or to build it. So, Bernard, do you have any final comments, anything that was left out of our analysis of Gary Null or the first time to really rebut Bessie Wash? Because this is basically the first time I've heard any sense of what motivated her to do what she did. But anything that I have left out, you may feel free to comment on.
Well, I just think that the listeners need to stay strong and pay close attention. They need to pay close attention to what's going on. There's a whole lot of lies that are being told, but you know you can easily see through the lies. People know what they were listening to before. They know whether they liked it before. I tuned in just this morning just to hear Santiago Nieves talk about how we didn't have debates in the morning. You know, just really foolishness. We had debates in the morning. And, of course, the morning show was a place where people could come and hear different ideas and get a lot of information. That's why it was so popular, because we were constantly doing that. And, you know, if these folks would just come on the air and do their program, the listeners would be able to tell whether they were good or bad. You don't have to tell people, hey, aren't I doing a good program? No, they can see that for themselves. So I just want to applaud Dennis, too. I met Dennis during this struggle, and, you know, he has been just tireless and very creative in doing what's necessary to make sure that we win this. And, you know, that's what this struggle has done. It has unleashed the genius in our community, where people have come together and come with creative ideas in order to get their radio station back. It's not about violence. We have not been violent. We have just made earnest efforts to try and get the information out.
And on that issue, Dennis, let's talk some programming. You came over from doing work with the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. It is Leonard Peltier Awareness Month that is about to come to an end, and their activities planned around town. We would be remiss in not doing a little bit of programming about, so, you know, if you can share with us a little bit of who Leonard Peltier is, and if you have any first-hand information on some of the activities that are taking place, how people can get information on it.
Sure. Leonard Peltier is an indigenous activist who's been in prison for over 25 years. He was engaged in a direct defense of the residents of what's called the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota in the early to mid-70s, and as where there was really a concerted effort coming from the federal government to suppress the indigenous uprising that was welling, also with the coordination of the American Indian Movement. So on that reservation, which was and remains one of the single most poorest locale in the country, as it's identified as a county, it is the poorest county, and that region was experiencing a level of violence that was comparable to the per capita violence under Pinochet at the most violent period of his regime. So third world conditions, third world government violence, and that's where Leonard Peltier was when two FBI agents were killed along with a member of the American Indian Movement on June 26th, 1975, or 26 years ago. So tomorrow is the anniversary of the incident at Oglala, and there will be events around the world commemorating that the anniversary of that unfortunate event. And I know in New York City they're going to be having a demonstration in front of the federal building where the FBI is located. A senior agent at the FBI here in New York City, whose name escapes me right now, has just been tapped as the replacement for Louis Free as director of the FBI. And certainly, the FBI is now at its, I'm pleased to say, it's being scrutinized by the public and by the media and by the government, by the Senate, for its history as a political police force, an agent of political repression. And so that's what's happening with Leonard Peltier. And, but it is very significant that you look at the kind of struggles that Pacifica's covered in the past and how the FBI is very contrary to all these movements. And here at the high water mark of the inspection of the FBI is the moment when this acting board chair Ken Ford has decided to turn listeners into the FBI merely for something as benign as filing a complaint. So it's all of our movements are related, and it's by building links that we create political power that can't really be countered by these people. So with Leonard, there is events around the country, and I'm actually trying to find that list for you off the web. But people can find it at freepeltier.org, freepeltier.org, and you'll find there's a global network of Peltier supporters that you can access on that website and find people near you and find out what's happening.
Well, and Dennis Monahan and Bernard
also,
White.
Also, a very vital legal strategy surrounding Leonard, and a very, I think, well-based arguments that still the corrupt legal system that governs us can still be used against itself to gain the release of this human rights activist, Leonard Peltier. So there are ongoing strategies, and you can educate yourself on the website, but we've got really a good core group of lawyers. Jennifer Harberry, a world-renowned human rights activist and attorney. Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General. And Bruce Ellison, one of the founders of the Wounded Knee Legal Defense Offense Committee. And a bunch of other lawyers, all working very hard to get Leonard out. And around that, we'll construct ongoing popular political activity to support that work and Leonard's human rights work.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis Monahan.
Right, back to work. We got three of seven board members to get off, and then we got the majority.
Okay.
And then I think Betsy Wash and Utrice Lead and Mark Schaub of KPFK and Garland Ganter of Houston and Steve Yasko, they're all going to be set forth on our thriving economy to find greener pastures.
Well, I can give us some pointers.
See you later.
Okay.
Okay, Dennis. All right, Bernard White. I guess let me see if I can get rid of Dennis without getting rid of Bernard. Hello, Bernard. You still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You know, I just want you to know that a letter came in while we were on the phone, and you know, this is great. Now, I can't take phone calls, but they can write. I am listening to Gary Noel via WBIX interviewing Bernard White. It's very important for everyone to realize now what the Pacifica National Board did in every case, the WPFW in Washington, D.C., the KPFT in Houston, KPFK in L.A., KPFA in Berkeley, and WBI in New York, was to remove the leftist progressive community voices from the stations. That is what the National Board has done, and that is their purpose. And considering the fact that the board members that have done this are real estate developers, union-busting lawyers, and brokers who buy and sell radio stations, in other words, conservative corporate people who are opposed to progressive principles and who want to stop leftist information from getting to the U.S. population, it is very clear why these board members have removed the leftists from the station. Gary Noem is trying to come up with various other reasons for these takeovers and firings. And although the corporate board members and the people they have put in charge of the stations have put forth lots of other reasons for those takeovers, they are all a smokescreen. The purpose is to prevent leftist information, facts about exploitation and mass murder around the world by U.S. corporate. Come on, you're moving the wrong way. U.S. corporation from reaching the American public, so that the public will continue electing conservative politicians who will enable the corporate exploitation and murder for profit to keep taking place. Look at what they did, not at what they say. What they say is a lie, smokescreen to disguise their political purpose. I'm not the only person who thinks this. Many do, including the well-known Edward S. Herman, who published articles about it in Z Magazine and elsewhere. So, Bernard, that is the word of one listener responding to hearing Gary Noem and WBIX. So maybe, you know, two or three or four other people may have heard it, and the word will spread about what we're doing, which is continue to expose the lie, continue to have the dialogue. And, yes, I want people to know, I went to Washington, D.C. in February, and I said, yeah, John Murdoch, you need to get on the air. You need to have Juan Gonzalez on. You need to come to the listeners in the Pacifica Station, especially at WBAI, and defend your position. They did one show, and that was it. The dialogue has not continued. So let's now see if they'll continue that dialogue with Gary Noem, who I think is a very safe place for them to do it on, where they will be able to get a full and, I hope, a fair hearing on his program, and we will be able to hear them firsthand refute what they claim to be lies, innuendos, or threats that have been made against them. I'm here in WBIX with your help, both the help of the listener and yourself, Bernard, and others. We will continue to give people unfettered and unlimited the ability to speak the truth or to challenge anything that we have to say on the issues. So I want to thank you for joining us on this special edition of WBAI Radio in Exile this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Al.
Thank you very much, and talk to you tomorrow.